with certified financial planner Dave Pezzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Pezzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Pezzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo.
I know, usually this is Kevin and I from Monday. But we're flip-flopping it today, okay? Admittedly, I have a 10 o'clock shotgun for men's opening day. So I thought, what the heck? Let's reverse it. I'm up, I'm here, and we'll reverse it. And thank you all for those of you who have taken the time to comment on our segments for Monday. And so far, it's been universal. And as long as Kevin's enjoying doing it, I am. And we'll keep doing it, so... Anyway, we are here live, and it's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. And we would love to have your calls today. We've got, Department of Labor rules. What does that mean for investors, right? Well, actually, I'll tell you the short of it now is we don't really know yet. I mean, this is your typical bureaucratic thing. And I think this is something that I don't want to get all wound up about this, but it's so typical, right? It's over 1,000 pages of legalese. 1,000. Does it really take that much to explain things? Like the Land Act, one of the greatest things. It's like one page. Abraham Lincoln, let's go and do this. Done. Right? And they're not even with all that kind of legalese. What they're doing now is now they'll write another 1,000 or 10,000 pages of, interpretations of the rules of this. It's just amazing. It really is. So, obviously, we don't really fully understand it. But we'll talk some more about that later in today's program. I found, actually you'll hear it later, with Kevin. It was interesting when we were, when I was in on last Monday. And you have this, open up to take calls and how angry sometimes people are. Because you might be thinking things will be okay. How much we feel that some people feel that they must be the smartest people. And all this kind of taken together, it's okay. I've done this for 35 years. That happens all the time. But it got me thinking a little bit. And I thought, wow, it's just interesting because it's so counter to some of the things, a lot of things we've been talking about. And so I thought, what in the world is going on? Why? We just crossed the 7th anniversary of the market bottom. 7 years ago. S&P 666. 300% later, here we are. And we pulled back. And the last couple of years have been pretty flat. Nothing going on. But see, that's when we don't stop. And we don't stop and go, wait a minute, time out. 7 years ago, how did we feel? That it would never get better. That it would never get better. People were sure that, the printing of money wasn't going to work. It was going to cause hyperinflation. Where's the inflation? But you see, when people say that, they go from one problem to the other, and they say, we can't print this much money. It's going to cause super high inflation. Doesn't. Does anybody say, come on, dude? And then when it doesn't, then it's on to the next thing. Yep, but wait till the Fed stops buying bonds. They did that years ago. Well, wait till the Fed actually stops reinvesting the interest. Wait till, just keep on waiting. And this is in spite of ISIS. It's in spite of the fiasco that's called the Iraq, Iraq mess, the Iraq lack of cleanup. We're just going to abandon them. Hope it all works out okay. I mean, it's a mess. It's our total retreat in the Middle East. The Middle East is on fire. It's the Syrian red line. It's all that stuff. It's terrorist attacks in Europe. It's debts, debts, debts. It's negative interest rates. What else? Oh, let's open up the newspaper. They'll tell us what else we should worry about. Right? Doesn't it go on? What about the Greek crisis? The Greek crisis, part two, part three, four. The pigs nations. Obamacare. The highest, we become the highest corporate tax country in the world. How anti-business can we be? What else? What else should we worry about? What else do we need to fuss about? The Chinese. Let's run the Chinese. What should? There's got to be some stuff with China we should be panicked about, isn't there? Don't we do this all the time? Well, I'm worried about this. Yep, that comes and goes. But I'm worried about this. Comes and goes. I'm worried about this. Comes and goes. 100 years. 200 years of the U.S. stock market. Goes down occasionally. Comes back to all-time highs. Play it again, Sam. We're going to play this number. We'll be here all night long. Come on back. We'll do this again and again and again and again. All your life long and all of your ancestors' lives long. And all of your descendants. We're just going to keep this party going. Oh, woe's me. Oh, no. You don't know. You don't know. You don't know what Obamacare is going to do. You don't know what the Greek crisis is going to do. You don't know, fill in the blank, what's going to happen. You're right, I don't. But it's amazing, isn't it, that this is what plays as intelligent? No, I'm sorry. Brilliant. Substantially more intelligent debate than an optimistic debate. And I'm just like, okay, all right. So if you think things are going to work out, you're a moron. Okay, well, that's a little strong, maybe. Not a moron. But, you know, it's really not deep thought unless you properly tug on your beard, look sad in the eyes, and just ponder all the problems. That's art. Okay, now I got it. So this is great. So now we figured out how we can look and sound intelligent, and we can make fun of the wild-eyed optimists. Crazy. When you stop, you say, "Oh, wait a minute. Okay, all right, sorry. Okay. Now, if something for like 100 years has done like, you know, red, black, red, black, red, black, red, black. And we'd go, okay, I think that the pattern of this series of things is red, black. No, here's what I think. I really am concerned that because of the injection of too much stimulus, that the red, black theory is going to end now. Wow. Okay. Okay. No, and that on top of the terrorism and the this and the that and the deficits and the Obamacare and the tax rates, da 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 da. Red black for 100 years. Red black for 200 years. Can't be red black right now. That is a brilliant person. I guess simplistically, I just kind of look at it and go, okay, there seems to be a pattern here. We go down occasionally, and then we go to all-time highs. Always. I'll take the pattern. I'll take the pattern. Even if I'm just kind of looking silly. But as we look at this, you say, no, it's just not good enough. It's not. I want to understand where we are and think what we're going to do. when something that you can't predict, which is the future. You see, let's say you did predict all the terrorist attacks. You predicted that there would be, that Obama would vacate the world. The Middle East would be on fire. Yeah, right? I mean, listen, you've made that prediction. What would you do? I bet you would have gone long oil.
Yeah, because the Middle East is on fire. We're going to be, oil prices will be up $100, $200 a barrel.
Oh, yeah. That's what people did. You see, if you got it right, did you get the reaction correct? When I'm a child, they're showing film strips of the orange world and gas masks. We undoubtedly, we knew. Some people say,
well, you know, I mean, the education system is number of years.
Look, they won 50 years ago. Because it doesn't matter what the reality is. They just keep promoting. I'm not saying we shouldn't have cleaned up the world. We clearly should. But to not acknowledge that it's cleaner with billions more people than when I was a child is absurd. That doesn't mean you do.
Oh, well, if we admit that, then we're going to stop.
No, we're not. But to sit there and say markets go down and act like they go down and stay down is the same thing. Or to put all of our value on price movement. My objective is to have an increasing stream of income that outpaces inflation all the days of my life, no matter how long I live. Okay, that sounds like a pretty much a standard, if you will, retirement income goal. So, please help me understand. I do want to understand. What does today's oil price movement, it's all caused by oil, we got to buy, sell, have to do with that? Procter & Gamble increases its dividend for 59 years in a row. Okay, so let's pretend I have a building. And for 59 years in a row, they don't even let me on the property. They just mail checks. I never have to do anything. I'm not allowed to do anything. I don't even fill out forms. They just send me more money on my building every year. And by the way, they sent me so much more that my income has gone up 66-fold in 55 years. Let me repeat that. 66-fold increase in income. I haven't done anything. There's never a dip. It only goes up. And then somebody drives by the building and goes, ha, I heard it just went down by $1 million. Should I panic? Should I sell? Maybe I better get an appraiser out and find out if it's really true. Or the fact that I just receive income is kind of like, yeah, well, dude, whatever, chill. Why would I care what somebody arbitrarily says it's worth? My kids will care. When I die, they can sell it. But right now, I'm just having the income. They might care what it is that day. But since I bought it in the patent, that mattered on the day I bought it, matters when I sell it. But I'm not selling. I'm enjoying the steadiest stream of income of any investment on the planet. But let me see what I can do about fussing myself. So let's pretend I own Procter & Gamble. Okay? And this is last year, right? So it's just like, 58 years in a row, they raised the dividend. Sure enough, there you go. 2015, did it again. Wow. Look at these guys. It's crazy, crazy. I get an increase in income. Procter & Gamble went from $93 and actually went below 70. I probably should have sold. Why would you sell? Well, aren't we supposed to worry about the price moving 20% and freak out about that? My $1 million of Procter & Gamble only worth $800,000? But your income went up. Yeah, but I want to study the market. I want to know every day. I want to have the opportunity to need a good stiff shot so I can sleep. I want to make stuff up to fuss about. That's what I want to do. It's who I am, man. That's why I'm wired. I like that. It's what people around me like about me. You know, that I'm really high-strung and really in their face about what's wrong with the world. They like me for that. They like that I fuss. Do you like that? Do you like that about yourself? Because when you see, when we think about this in the abstract, right? We're in it, right? It's not like that. And we send out reports, right? Okay, so when we start sending out reports and get our software up and going, then we'll have that. But we'll put it in there and it'll be like, you know, the account went up 6%, blah, blah, blah. All irrelevant. It's tough to measure, and I get that. It's hard to pull away. But when we sit around, now, you know what? We got to take a break. And when I come, because I got another. I'm adding to this. We got to move on. We got to move on to take a break, and I'll finish my thoughts after the break. And in the meantime, please load up the board 580-5436 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436 Idaho's Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. On Idaho's talk station, 580-KITO.
Hello, welcome, and again, thank you so much for joining us. Please do give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 580-5436, 580-KITO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. You know, I've been talking about, obviously, today, if you've just tuned in, it's not obvious at all, but we are talking about how, when something is so repetitive as we get market sell-offs and then we go to all-time highs, you know, red, black, red, black. What's the sequence here? Red, black, red, black, red, black. What's the sequence? But we don't know the timing of that sequence. And that's the thing. So people are always out there predicting. And nowadays with the Internet, everybody's screaming so much stuff, and our attention span's shrinking. I think it's going to keep getting worse. Then we get people like Peter Schiff out there. You know, I think gold's going to go higher. It's not going to go higher. No. I think it's going to go to 3,000. Do I hear 4,000? Do I hear 5,000? I hear end of the world. The world ending sooner than later. Yes, there we have it. Okay, winner is Peter Schiff, the most doomsday guy in the world. Does that help? Does it help? So when we take all that stuff in day after day, and as I say, as deep intellectual thought, isn't it really the reality of it? Isn't it pretty clear that we're, as the Brits say, clever by half? We spend an enormous amount of energy in order to outfox ourselves when it's really pretty simple. Control your behavior. Quit selling things after they go down. Quit running around in fear. Okay, once again, just in case you missed it earlier, here's the pattern. Occasional sell-off, go to all-time high. Occasional sell-off, go to all-time high. Go down a little bit, go back again to all-time highs. All your life, all your parents' lives. For 100 years, for 200 years. I know, back in the old day, you know, like when we're trying to fight our way across the prairies, it was a lot easier then. I know, there's so much worse out there now. Can't imagine. But why we do this, I don't know. Why we gravitate towards, you know, Peter Schiff was asked recently as an example, and why do I bring up Peter Schiff? For gosh sakes, there are endless numbers of people. Because he seems to be the loudest and proudest of his bearish commentary. But he was actually called on the carpet here recently. Asked by CNBC about his call for gold in 2012, October 2012. Gold's going to $5,000 an ounce. At the time, it was $1,700. We're at $1,200 today. Now, that was pointed out to him, and of course, it didn't make him real happy. So it was pointed out. And he made his call again that in October of 2014. Well, maybe not 5,000, but it would go through 2,000. Mr. Schiff, you've proclaimed for years now that the dollar will crash. When you started talking about that, the dollar index was 80. Today, it's 99. The dollar's actually very significantly strengthened since you made that call. What do you think now?
Well, I think it'll be even worse because it's from a higher level.
Oh, okay. I know. I got it. You're not wrong. You're never wrong. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't want to reassess? No, I'm not wrong.
Mr. Schiff, you were proclaiming that there would be a bond crisis as well, that the Treasury bond would collapse.
His answer. I was only wrong in that I was too optimistic on the world's ability to figure it out.
Oh, thank goodness. He figured out that he was the only one smart enough, and unfortunately he thought, you know, you and I were smarter than we are and would get the collapse of the Treasury. He's not wrong. He just was too optimistic about my intelligence.
QE will not create any jobs. Final point. Yeah, I guess it created some. Okay, I want to know what Peter Schiff has to think, and then I want to go the other direction.
You see, when people are burying themselves in, that's the commentary, and I'm going to shift over from Peter Schiff over to, what's his name, David Stockton, or go over to the Stansberry Group, which is a whole research group of, let's find some people with a big name that'll throw in with us and talk about the world-ending stuff so we can sell gold and, you know, doomsday stuff on our website and call it really intellectual thought.
Okay, simple. Market goes to all-time highs. We have pullbacks. Back to all-time highs, pullbacks. But I'm going to sit around fussing about stuff and worried about what's going to happen with the ECB when they pull out, and then what happens with ISIS and Iraq and Putin and stuff. And I'm going to try to game something that nobody's ever been able to game before. And I can be clever by half. Or I can just kind of simplistically move along. And so I want to focus on income, growth of income, faster than the rate of inflation all the days of my life. Boom. Works. I don't know why we can't ever grasp this, but bad stuff has actually happened in the past. A lot worse. But we can't feel it. We don't put in an emotional time what it would have felt like when they bombed Pearl Harbor. What would that feel like, you think? You're already fighting a war. Aren't you pretty sure, as you turn out the lights, they're coming? 10 years later, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 13.3% per year compounded. You think it would have been comforting to sit around and go, wow, cool, Dad, what's that thing up there in the sky? Oh, that's Russia. They launched a satellite. We can't do that, and they hate us. They want to destroy our country. Daddy, that doesn't sound really good.
Ah, it's okay. Who cares anyway? Soviets? Ah, it'll be fine.
14.3% compounded gains. The Berlin Wall, symbol of the Cold War, put that thing up, boom, 9% a year. Kennedy assassinated, 9% a year, compounded. It is never going to get better. Never. I mean, can you imagine? How can we have a president impeached? Oh, sorry, he resigned. How are we going to ever come back from that? Do you realize there's gas lines? Whip inflation now buttons like that? Oh, that'll do it. 15% per year compounded 10 years later.
Oh, and remember, I do. I was at the computer. Remember when the Dow fell? Are you ready for this?
22.6% one day in 1987. One day.
Nah, I'm sure everybody said, it'll be fine. Who cares about that?
16% per year compounded for the next 10 years.
All right, I think you get the point. Bad equals good, good equals bad. Don't chase it. Play all of history. Laugh all the way to the bank. Maybe your friends won't want to dialogue with you about the coming, you know, or what this economist, what the Austrian economist says, a Bitcoin a thing over here and a this over there and a hyperinflation link over here. And figuring out all of what's wrong. But I ask this question, I just come back. What are you going to do? You know, let's say you're right. And for the first time in 200 years, we go down, we don't come back. But don't pretend you're right because the market has a correction. It will correct. I predict now the market will correct. That's it. It's going to go down at some point in time from some level, and then it'll stop going down and it'll go back up from some level. Quite probably to all-time highs, because actually that's the lifelong pattern that the market has had. Better than any other investment. But I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Do I go build a bunker because I'm pretty sure the ISIS is coming? Or, I mean, what do I do? What do I do with investments? What do you do? What are you going to do about the fill in the blank? I mean, I love the new one I heard. Something about a, you know, can you give me some information on the invisible market or something, the second stock market? You know, the one that Warren Buffett and others really play on. Huh? I know. That's in the same category, the same bookshelves as the Shemitah and Blood Moon combo of last year. Isn't it? Where do we go? Do we decide we're going to spend all of our time here when history says it's really about this over here? It's our call personally. But this whole confirmation bias for all of us, right, of only reading things that agree with our opinion. That's not learning. It's not growing. This whole idea of the dialogue of doom being more thoughtful and wise is weird to me. Because the evidence of history is you're just wrong. I mean, I'm not talking about the weight of evidence. The scale can't stand. It's so absurd. What's the market going to do next week? You don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. Nobody knows next year. Here's what I know. The probability of losing money in stocks in the U.S. stock market when an investment is held for 3 years is only 14%. Three lousy little years. But most people are planning for their entire life. 3 years. People want to know what's going to happen in 3 days. Who cares? That is the magic when you capture it. That's the magic. It doesn't matter what the price does now. Stop making it matter. It doesn't matter. It only matters when you buy and when you sell. That's when price matters. In between, it only matters what that investment generates for you. That's it. And for those of you who are actually reinvesting some or putting money away regularly, why would you ever root for a bull market? What, are you crazy? You obviously don't understand math at all.
Buy low, sell high. Buy low, sell high. That's kind of what you want to be thinking about, is buying low. Accumulate your stocks low. Don't sell them when they're low. That's the simplistic truth. But we don't. We don't, do we? We don't think of it that way. All right, I'm way overdue. And I'm way overdue for some phone calls, some emails. It's dave@petsofinancial.net. It's 580-KIDO. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho.
Welcome and thank you. Hello, welcome and thanks for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Kind of jumped the gun there. I guess they need to kind of, I need to turn the microphone on. It's all right. We're here and we want you here. So do give us a call. And if you prefer email, that's great. That's fine. It's not as good as an interaction on the phone, but it's dave@petsofinancial, P-E-T-S-O, financial.net. Certainly over the years, I've had so many great email comments, questions. So if that's easiest for you, fire them off. Fire them off. But right now, let's go to the phones. Let's go to John in Meridian. John, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yes, hello, Dave.
Hi, John.
So I heard I've heard Wealth Beyond Wall Street advertised on the radio quite a bit lately. Can you elaborate on that? Is that worth looking into?
I can elaborate this way. I really don't know what they're selling. Probably a variable annuity or an equity indexed annuity of some kind, or a life insurance policy. That's my best guess. But here's what I know. That's, there's these types of ads are not worth you spending 1 second on. And when people say, I'm just getting some education, I'm just going to get some material, no, unless you get balanced, thoughtful information, right? That's not helpful to you. It's misleading. It's misguiding you. It's deceptive, and that it doesn't help you. So on all of those types of things, John, I just say, no, don't. This is not, we overcomplicate it, which is really the point of what I'm trying, the bottom line I'm trying to get to. You can't time this thing. There is no secret stock market. There isn't a secret sauce that's going to enable you to somehow do better than what people do in the market. You can avoid the downturn, but you can get all the upturn. No, you can't do that. That's not how it works. What's that commercial? It doesn't work that way. That's not the way it works. And we know that's not the way it works, but we keep searching for it. So the answer is it's some kind of packaged product, and I just don't know which one it is. I've seen them both ways, but the answer is it's not. And all they do to try to drive this, that's why we talk about this whole concept of fear and really what history is, and why are we trying to figure out things we can't figure out, instead of just playing in games that win and avoiding games that lose. It's not all that hard. But it is hard on human beings. And when we say things like, you don't want to play in the Wall Street casino. No, I don't. No, that sounds really bad. I don't want to do that. Quit losing your wealth and risking your capital, your future, your family's future in the risky casino of Wall Street. Wow, that's frightening. Come sign up for an annuity, and we'll get really paid high, super high commissions, and you can make very little or none, and we'll tie your money up for a decade or more. That's what that is. But it's, again, it's sold by fear. And so whenever I see that, that's why we have to take a step back and reel it back in and go, okay, is this a casino? Absolutely, in the short term. Absolutely. I'm going to bet on red. It's not. But here's what you really have with it, okay? And whenever markets move around, I like it this way. I heard this analogy. I thought it was very interesting. Let's say you have ten cards, right? Five red, five black, okay? And so you have a 50-50 shot of picking a red card, right? Let's say you pull out a card and you say, okay, we'll bet a dollar. And boom. It's you bet black, it's red. Now there's nine cards left. Do you want to bet again? Now, if we're talking about the market, yeah, irrational people would go, are you kidding me? I got five chances to win against four? Looks like I get to be the casino now. How about we up the bet to $5? And if you're wrong again, you'd want to bet even more. But now if we flip that around and you are an irrational investor, and most all investors are completely irrational, they are. We think we're really smart, but we're not. We're emotional wrecks. And so when we turn around and we think about this from a standpoint of the odds are in my favor, but I've lost twice, and now my upside looks even better, I want to quit playing. Who does that? Investors do all the time. After markets go down, people sell out. And that's why it's important, John, for us to just kind of keep trying to temper our emotions and stay away from things that, you know what, you don't even need to look into. You already know in your heart of hearts that there's no secret sauce. There's no secret plan. That Warren Buffett's overdoing this other thing while pretending to, like, own U.S. corporations. No, he's not. He's not. Anything else, John?
No. So what you're saying is don't overcomplicate it, don't overthink it. It's just really simple, buy low and sell high.
It is, and you don't even have to be worried about the sell part because you won't want to sell when things are good anyway. I get that. It's really hard. It's hard to sell your winners. But if you're speculating on something like a Micron, you do need to sell occasionally. They don't pay a dividend. And I am saying we overcomplicate it badly. Fear and overcomplication sells product. Simplicity does not. It doesn't sell books. It's a thought process to wealth. It's a thought process to peace. It's not easy. That's why so many people, 99% of people, need a coach to coach them through this. They don't just have this innate ability to get up and be Warren Buffett and go buy things and put them away forever. They don't. They're drawn in by the train wreck of the media. They're drawn in by worry and fear. It's human nature. That's why we all have to band together and keep reminding ourselves and read good stuff, not dumb stuff. Yeah, I predict the world is ending. Good for you. Welcome to the 2,000-year-old club of wrong prognosticators. Good for you. Go stand over there. For 2,000 years, that's the end of the world's been coming. I have absolutely no bet. My end of the world is a few more spins of the globe away for me, and I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I'm gone. Went to a funeral on Friday. I'm going to one on Monday. They're not worried about the end of the world, are they? Theirs ended. Yours and mine's going to end. Why do I think I have to figure this stuff out? I don't. It is we overcomplicate things all the time, but we've got to keep reminding ourselves. It's not that simple to say, he's right. I'm overcomplicating this. I'll never have a problem with this again. Yeah, we will, because we're humans. And in human nature, as we worry about what's right in front of us, don't we? A lot. John, thank you. I got to take a quick break. Appreciate your call.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. And our number is 580-543-6580-KIDO. Hey, it's okay. You can disagree. Honest to goodness, lots of people do. Lots of people do. We're going to take our final break, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzel on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. 580-5436 is our number, 580-KITO. And also, if you prefer, it's dave@petzelfinancial.net. Now, that's .net number one, not .com. Our website, of course, so I can perfectly confuse it for you, is a .com. And there you would want to go for podcasts. You would want to go there for calculators and articles to help you with your own financial planning. Okay? But right now, today, it's dave@petzelfinancial.net if you have a question. And we do have a question. You talked about P&G. The dividend has always gone up. Does it go up even if the stock price goes down? Why don't I switch everything to dividend stocks? Thanks, Mark. Mark, that's, you got it. That's the killer. Last year, as I mentioned, at one point, Procter & Gamble was down like 25% in price for the year, even after they had raised the dividend. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Now, it didn't finish down that much. With dividend included, it still was down 17% last year. Not that they had a recall on soap or anything. They didn't. It just fell because price is not value. So you're absolutely right. So if you can, if you need to, close your eyes for this. But I want to give you an illustration, and then I'll circle back and say, yeah, you kind of sort of can just buy dividend-paying stocks. But let's suppose we have a bucket, okay? A bucket of assets, money, and we put it in the bank, and I put a bigger amount in the bank. Okay, that's our understanding, right? I have a bigger bucket in the bank. I get paid more. I mean, that's just simple. And this is where I have to point this out, because this is where your mind takes it. So since I have more value, price, I get more value, right? I get more out of my bigger bucket. Now, let's say we take a bucket of $100,000 and we put in that bucket a whole basket of dividend-paying stocks and bonds in that bucket. And it's $100,000. And let's just say it's paying $4,000 a year. Not a big stretch. Stock and bond get 4%. $4,000. Now, let's say arbitrarily you wake up the next month and you get your report and you go, whoa, what happened? My $100,000 is now priced at $90,000. What happens to your $4,000 a month? The answer is it's $4,000. Now, there's no guarantee. But here's what has always happened. You don't just get the $4,000 a month or a year. You get an increase occasionally, like as in most all years. So the $4,000 becomes a little more than $4,000. Eventually becomes $5,000. Eventually becomes $6,000. Not because of anything to do with the price, only because the components, if you will, like in our example, the Procter & Gambles of the world, pay more. Then you get more. And the best way I can think about this is this. In that basket we have of securities, think of it this way. On your house, you had a huge catastrophic drop. Let's just call it 40% of the value of your house. Third, you lost a third of your value on your house if you sold. It went down during the Great Recession, right? So that is true. Did the bank call you and say, hey, we see the value went down. You send us a third less. They don't do that with corporations either, where they say, on those bonds, you just send us a little less. The price in the market changed. That doesn't work that way. Not at all. Dividends are not guaranteed to go up every year, and that's why you have to watch for certain periods, right? Like the financial collapse, all banks stopped paying dividends as a big component of the market. Overall, there was a slight decrease that year. You don't own only one. Collectively, lots of different things. Think global, think income. But most importantly on the dividend side, think growth of income. Can they sustain and grow the income going forward? If so, you may have a winner. And the answer to your question, bottom line, is my belief for over 30 years, and the evidence shows it's not a bad belief, okay, is that the core of all investors' portfolios from a risk-adjusted return should be in income-oriented stocks. Maybe not all. We'll talk about that another time. We'll talk about Department of Labor law after Fox News. Hello and welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only. And we are going to talk about stocks. We just I talked about Procter & Gamble as a broad example of a soap company that has continued to, for zillions of years, do very well for investors. That's not a prediction of the future. That's an example of the past. And using examples of the past is a teaching tool. Not, well, because of the past, A and plus B, that's not the way investments work. They don't work linear. That's how your mind thinks. I know that. Like we talked earlier, the analogy of the bucket, right? I have a bigger bucket at the bank, I earn more. I have a bigger bucket in the market, doesn't change my income. We don't think that way. Which is why this is such an easy but very difficult to follow path in investing. Buy quality, leave it the heck alone. Let it do its thing. Get rich. Or we can run around and be clever by half because we're so smart. Brilliant. I don't think that's clever. I think it's really not clever. But it's hard. It's hard to change. And so, and pulling away and saying, you know, well, you should buy this and the technicals and the charts and the blah, 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 leads us further from the truth. Turn it down. Tune it out. That's what we're here to talk about, honestly. But please, please, please don't think, oh, yeah, I think I'm going to go buy Procter. Who knows what it's going to do in the future, and you need a whole basket of those anyway. It's called diversification. It's really fundamentally a pretty good idea. I promise we talk a little bit about the Department of Labor because this is a big, big thing. It's a big thing. But we don't know what this big thing totally is yet. Because in the infinite wisdom of what bureaucrats do, which is to write rules and then write them so nobody understands what they are and write them long so we have to write new ones and we keep adding to it. Because what we like to do as bureaucrats, we push paper. And we're good at it. We're really good at it. We're going to make it so confusing that we really basically get to do what we want to do. Simplicity is not our game. Confusion is. We are the government and we're here to help. Confuse you even more. I don't know why this isn't a bigger issue, but it's not. So we just simply accept that there's over 1,000 pages in a rule of how we're supposed to, of rules, of how we're supposed to, as advisors, engage with clients. Well, there's thousands of pages already, but now we need 1,000 more of something simple. Only bureaucrats think like this. But that's who's in charge. There's a bunch of academics that at the Department of Labor have never done anything in their whole life. They don't do anything. They certainly don't know investing. They don't have any investment background.
Well, I am the head of the Department of Labor, and I've been a bureaucrat my whole life, so I think you all have to act like this. The whole financial sector should do this.
Brilliant. Of course it's brilliant. The arrogance is off the charts. But this is what we have. And it is, we think, better than the disaster that was there. And as you probably have heard me talk about before, I did go back to D.C. to lobby against this. And given, and I need to, you know, come clean on this. Almost all of our business, virtually every single dollar we make has always been governed by the fiduciary rule. So don't think I'm trying to protect anything. In many ways, as you know, I've been screaming for more regulation, particularly to protect seniors against the vultures that promise market returns without market risk, that sell fear, that pimp it in high commission products. Because the state of Idaho's Department of Insurance chooses to do nothing about it, not even talk about it, not engage with it, just let seniors get stolen from, then I think we have to reach a point that is so hard for somebody like me Because whenever you open up the camel's tent, do you really think that only the camel's nose is coming in under this DOL rule? Or do you think that ultimately we'll have 2,000 pages and then 3 and 4 of how to regulate investments in retirement plans by the Department of Labor? I hate the idea. But if our own bureaucrats here only want to collect a paycheck and don't want to actually do anything to protect the people that they proclaim to be protecting, I don't know what else we do. So I'm glad to see that there is some provision for that. Here's what's going on. Basically speaking, what's the Department of Labor rule? It says, in a nice way, well, what we want to do is we want to have a fiduciary standard of conduct. That'll stop all high commission products from happening. Well, it would. That's true. It also means it would stop perfectly normal products from being delivered to middle and low income people. The very ones we pretend as a bureaucrat to be protecting. Well, that's what we got to protect, the little guy. Okay, so why are you destroying any chance they have of getting help? Now, I said this a long time ago. I firmly believe it's true. This administration and these folks simply want to take over your IRAs, your 401ks. They know better what to do than you. It is a conspiracy to do that. There's so many other ways to do this. But for those of you wondering why they're doing this, that's why. I believe that's why. They eventually want to have government control of your 401k. To what end, I'm not sure, but that's what they want. Could it affect, so some of the key questions, could it affect my relationship with my advisor right now? The answer is we don't know yet, and it will in some cases. In others, it has absolutely no bearing whatsoever. But either way, it won't take effect until a year from now. Begin to take effect. The full effects will be over the next few years. Again, honestly, in over 1,000 pages of legalese, we still really don't know, buried in the details, what all this really means yet. Okay? So don't take any of this to the bank. And of course, they've got to write thousands of more pages to interpret these stuff, just like Dodd-Frank. It'll be a mess in the end. Will it affect my dealings with my advisor? Yes, it will, to some degree, unless you already have a fiduciary type relationship. What is a fiduciary relationship? I can't, and somebody just talk English to me, right? Okay? It means you're paying a fee. Okay, that's the bottom line, what people think. Oh, I pay a fee for advice. But it's more than that, okay? So that's why we do call it a fiduciary standard. It means I can only do what's best for my client. I can't steer to products that pay more to me. In fact, I can't receive compensation for steering to something if I'm collecting a fee as well. Can't. There is no reason to steer it somewhere else. That's the fiduciary rule. Okay? Always and only in the best interest of the client. What is the best solution to what they're trying to do? Okay? I think it's going to change things in a very positive way. I think those things have been changing. Costs have been coming down. You know, it used to be, you could pay up to 1% or more, 1.5%. Very few people out there charge 1.5%. We never did. That's not look at us. But most independents never did that. And anyway, most people don't even pay 1 now. They don't. They don't. But it's not about cost. And this is what people miss. Yeah, all things being equal, don't pay an advisor. Are all things equal? Do you need a coach? Does it help when you go to the gym to have somebody helping you? Right? A trainer. Do great golfers typically have a coach? Well, they don't need it. Why would they need a coach? That's crazy. That's crazy talk. Why would you try to improve a +5 golfer swing? Right? Okay? That's what, I'm not trying to sell you. All I'm saying is that's the point which we miss. This isn't a cost issue. If it was, all we would do is find the lowest cost answers, period. Not the lowest risk, not the right combination, not the right hand-holding, not the you've got to buy in. Not the phone call that says, I know you're sitting on a pile of cash. It's time. Come on. Make a move. Quit reading that nonsense. It's not helping you. It's financial pornography. Stop that. Stop that. Stop behaving like that. Don't do that. Don't be an emotional girl. Invest. Be thoughtful. Move forward. That's what most people need. It's not, well, we've got this little super program, a little stop-loss thingy, write some options over the top of and put it all in this product, we guarantee you. Market returns with no risk. Not true. So does it affect your relationship? Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer. What kind of changes can I be likely to see? Okay? I think you're going to see this at all major brokerages, okay? All major firms. Okay? No more low-end investors. None. None. They'll have to have a minimum of 50 or 100,000. I don't know what the minimum would be. That's what I think is going to happen on that end because they're just simply not going to... it's not profitable business anyway. So why take the risk of a government inquiry and your investment bank and everybody hates you already? You're a perfect political football. Hate the investment bankers. That's a hard statement. Okay? So that, I think, is going to be the biggest problem. That was the biggest fight. How do we take care of low-end people that need the most care? We've got to help them get up, right? Got to. And will the new rule affect what I can invest in? And the answer is, of course it will. I think in many positive ways. I think with proper disclosures, I think a lot of the equity index annuities and stuff are going to go away because they're not going to be able to lie anymore and tell people you get market returns with no risk. Oh, and yet I don't have to pay me. You don't pay me. No, I just make nothing. The insurance company gives me a little bit, you know. No. Where do you think that money comes from? Hidden or not, it's out of your pocket. That's going to have to be disclosed. That part of it is good. But disclosure in thousands of pages and prospectuses that stack to the sky are not disclosures. They're so thick and so legal that nobody reads them. Long term, I believe that the best course of action on this rule is to completely unwind it, have the SEC continue, as they have been for many years, working diligently within and outside of the industry to try to come up with things like a simplified prospectus, an English version of what lawyers ruin every time, to come up with a few solid rules of disclosure. Because this industry does have too many hidden things. It does. A lot of hidden money out there. But by and large, the industry is pretty good. And bureaucrats are bureaucrats, and they ruin everything they touch. Everything. Everything is ruined by government. I know some of you think that's a political statement. I think it's a statement of fact. In the name of fairness, let's go do this. And then they ruin it. So we do, you know, let's do this little safety net over here. Now we have an uncontrollable mess. This led to generational poverty. Cool. Good job. Way to go, government.
In all the rulemaking, it just gets bigger and bigger. I still have great hope because there's still dialogue going on. Both Democrats and Republicans are trying hard to come up with some solutions to stop senior theft. But until insurance companies do something about that, until departments of insurance in various states do something about it, because it's not a federal issue, then I have to say, we bring this on ourselves. We begged the government to come in. We begged them to take this over. Because our own Department of Insurance isn't protecting anybody. They just won't do it. I don't know what they do. I have no idea what they do except push paper licensing, pay us $50, pay us $300 here, do that. They push paper. I think unless an insurance agent comes in and rapes an old person or murders them or steals their purse, it's okay. It's cool. It's not an issue. And so we begged them to come in and say that can't go on anymore in people's retirement accounts, where commissions are 10% up front. How does that work? You know what? It doesn't. Guarantee or not, it can't work. At least these things need to be disclosed in red print, simplistically, not on page 135 of a prospectus buried in there. Yeah, we charge a lot. No, that's not a disclosure. But the Department of Labor rule right now is going to be phased in over the next couple of years. Nothing until 2017. So it's big. It's going to change the way people have to do business with, in my industry, have to do business with their customers. Some of it is so necessary. My fear is, of course, now the camel's nose is in the tent. He's coming all the way in and wants all of your retirement money. And there's no question that that's what will happen unless we can pull back a little bit, work with this rule, both sides of the aisle, and come up with a simpler, better approach to protecting investors. So bottom line, nothing happening now. Everything starts a year from now. Our number here and final segment upcoming, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho Petso, on Idaho's talk station, 580-KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. We're about out of here. Well, we're not about out of here. We have several minutes. If somebody wants to ring us up, too, 580-KIDO, we've got time for a question. No doubt about that. But anyway, after that, we're not done. I mean, it's not we're moving on. Debbie will be here in 30 minutes, more than 30 minutes from now. But we kind of reversed everything today because I am going to run for men's opening day at my club, so yay. Ball's in the air at 10, so it'll be a hustle out of here in a few minutes to get there. But what we did is normally, of course, we have the Monday recording with Kevin and myself. And, of course, I'll be in studio again Monday morning with Kevin to do it again. But we're going to play that one coming up here in a few minutes for the end of this program. So I appreciate you letting me get out of here a little bit early and enjoy this incredible weekend. And, of course, it's Masters weekend, too, which makes it doubly exciting. Thrilling for those of us golfers. And I just have to tell you, it's just one of those things. I know it sounds like I'm boasting, and I don't mean to. I just mean to say how privileged it was that I got to go to Augusta. And I got to play Augusta. I got to actually stay there. And that kind of magic is so rare in life
But I get a lot of that. It's weird. I just have had a lot of really amazing things. And sometimes, like all of us, please bear with me if you're thinking, what kind of weird financial show is this? I think, like all of us, we forget. And you know what? A lot of magic happened in your life, too. I look at the magic of a simple life, like when I was at the funeral yesterday of an amazing person. Stunningly amazing person. Packed the place. Amazing love. Didn't travel the world. Had a lot of magic in her life. We sometimes don't stop and recognize how incredible and how incredibly blessed we are. I mean, we already won the lottery of life to be born in America. We win. But we govern our investments by fear, even though we're winners. We win. We won. Game over. We already won. And if we don't stop sometimes and just go, wow, I've been so blessed. And this country has been so blessed. There's such abundance around us. We live in misery. But what that does, okay, you be depressed, I'll be happy, it's okay. Right? Go do your thing. But here's what I'm saying. When you do that, don't you think that that has a huge impact on your ability to invest? On your ability to think forward? To believe in the future? Even as the past has been 100% problems, corrections, new highs. Do you really think that we're going to stop technological progression? Do you really think that human beings now that are not going hungry, that this isn't an amazing thing that just happened over the last 20 years? That millions don't die of starvation every year? That millions more won't die of malaria and things like that? Isn't that amazing? Isn't it amazing that we can feed people, that we can find and have clean drinking water? Not because we can build giant factories, or I'm sorry, plants to clean it up, but because we can have micro ones in the middle of Africa and everywhere else. And there won't be even more abundance because of that? I know. The deficit's too high. The politicians are this. I got it. But if we don't fundamentally stop and recognize how amazingly blessed we are and how amazingly abundant we are, we don't invest. We live in fear. And that's just crazy. It really is. It makes us make bad decisions. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. I know I'm planning on it. Enjoy the Masters and enjoy this fabulous weather we have in Boise. And I do hope you find a little magic yourself this weekend and recognize how blessed we are.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's talk station. Idaho's talk station, 580-KITO.
And blessed to be a part of your day. Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO, with our great friend Dave Petzo, the Petzo Center. Petzo Financial, Dave Petzo on Facebook and Twitter and everything else. Dave, good morning.
Great to be here, Kevin.
Good to have you with us here as we take a look at the big story of the day. Donald Trump over the weekend revealing in an interview with the Washington Post with Bob Costa and Bob Woodward that he believes a great recession is on the way. And I decided we're not going to candy coat this. We're going to give you the serious question. So, are you in cahoots with Donald Trump on planning the next recession?
No. But that probably doesn't surprise you.
Well, we're running tape, so just remember. But in all seriousness here, when you hear about this, you and I have been speculating about this. You railed against the pessimists for quite some time. What do you make of the financial outlook, forecast by Mr. Trump?
Kevin, actually, we could easily shift into a recession. We could. excuse me, we're barely growing. And so anything could tip it over and into recession. But he's talking about a great recession, a terrible recession, that we're in a huge financial bubble that's going to pop. And it's going to be let down by the stock market. And I just don't see the same overvaluations that Mr. Trump does. I think that a lot, it's again playing to this hyperbolic reaction to everything in our world, that it's all bad all the time, everything's about to collapse, even though we have the greatest prosperity we ever have since man set foot on Earth.
Indeed. Of course, prosperity for some, not for everyone.
I would argue that the average standard of living in all over the world is the greatest it's ever been, by far, and that more people are not going to starve to death in this coming year than ever in history. And that's an amazing achievement for the whole world over the past 50 and 100 years. And when we look at the United States, even the people that live below the poverty line live extremely well. Cell phones, cable TV, free housing. It is amazing how well people live. In a, yes, some better than others, but that's getting into the comparison game, and not to start a sermon, but that's really really the whole point, isn't it? We all sit around, and if Mr. Trump has more than I do, then woe is me. I must not be doing very well.
On the other hand, real wages have not grown in America for years. We have politicians from everybody talking about that.
Absolutely, and that's absolutely true. And that is a huge education gap there for the lower-level people. There's no way that they can operate these very sophisticated machines, and that's the only thing that's paying out there, Kevin. We now have so much equipment and so many robotics that are going to take all of those low-level jobs away eventually. I don't mean eventually as in decades, eventually as in perhaps next month. And there's so many of those jobs have been disappearing. I think I've talked about the fact that going out and seeing that space age French fry plant in Caldwell, right? It's just amazing how the robotics and the forklifts that run around without people on them. Everything is robotics, and instead of cutting fries and looking for bruises the way humans did, thousands of them did. The robots the optic scanners can see them so quickly. And just a little poof of air, and they're gone.
Right. But, here's another thing, Dave Pezzo. Whether people agree with you or not, one thing that we can all agree on about you is that you're a patriot and that you love America and that you want to see America succeed, like Ronald Reagan, a person who's had a lot of influence on you and so many of us here at 580 KIDO. But there seems to be a collusion among a lot of American factories and high-tech firms to hire people that are foreigners to take American jobs. You've heard the story about Disney where they're training their workers. The workers are training their replacements. And now, apparently, there's a big lawsuit against New York Life. A lot of this is going on. It's been underreported. How do we take a look at that if the American dream is being taken away from a lot of folks because of this? As you said, they've done all the right things.
Yep.
I mean, getting a job at Disney in IT, that's the highest of the highs.
Yep.
And then these folks come in and say, well, you're going to be replaced by Billy from Bangladesh.
That's right. Yeah.
Your thoughts?
As an employer, I think that's just not good. I don't like that at all. In a drive for profits, it's the business's job. But at the same time, we're talking about peanuts for all these enterprises in that we can save just a little bit on some IT jobs by outsourcing them to India. It's not a big thing. It's not a big amount of money. So when they're doing this, I know that most companies that do this are doing it because they can't find enough people. And I know that Micron has looked and looked and looked and does have to go overseas to find some of their engineers. There's no question that they do hire plenty of people in the United States, but they also do bring in some visa workers from the outside to help them do their manufacturing. But, Kevin, the kind of budget they have, I don't think they're trying to save $10,000 in salary. It's the kind of money that they have to spend on the equipment and everything. It's a much more capital-intensive business.
Sure, but, I mean, you as an employer, there's a covenant. Employer,
yes.
Employee, and that seems to be lost on some of these major corporations. You go back to Disney, I mean, they raise ticket prices every year.
Yep.
And there's nothing more all-American than Disney. And I guess maybe that's what's fueling some of the Donald Trump vibe, if you will. They see the great betrayal of the American worker.
Kevin, I agree with that, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. What I'm really saying is not that Donald Trump is wrong and we're not in a weaker time. And what I'm saying is I would like to see people approach this the way this election and what their outlook is for America the way Reagan did. You case this whole section that we're talking about here, a segment, if you will, about Ronald Reagan. And what he was an optimist about that we could be better, not we're about to enter into the greatest recession ever, and get out of here if you disagree with me. And it's this kind of angst that goes on every single day. And you can't imagine that person in the White House. I mean, nobody acts like that. And where is Ronald Reagan, right? I mean, you say that, and people talk about his policies, but it was really his leadership and optimism, optimistic leadership, that built a better vision of America, and that's why America did so well. He believed in each person, each business, and that's why when we talk about these big businesses out there that are run by accountants, Kevin, and there's nothing wrong with accounting, but when you think about small business, these are entrepreneurs. They're people that are out there creating something, and they have people around them, just a few of them maybe, but they love those people, and they take care of those people, and they mean to. They aren't looking at a quarterly report on Wall Street like accountants do and think I'm going to slash this job here or there. They think about expansion, they think about growing, and they don't think about just the quarterly numbers.
Dave Petzl with us here, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You're right. It does come down to a challenge, though, for folks looking for a job, trying to find that dream job. And as we've talked about quite some time, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, if people would say you're going to switch jobs, switch careers, mm-hmm. perhaps four or five times in your lifetime, that was heresy.
Right. And now we've got people, what do they think? He's, that's why when people talk about the death of the pension, it's good because the 401k is the only thing you've got walking with you job to job, right? And a pension wouldn't. And so it's a good thing we've kind of shifted that over. But Kevin, it is a much more mobile world. And that part of it, that kind of job freedom, is a huge positive to everybody out there. It can create more uncertainty, no doubt. But the idea that people are going to be able to shift their jobs and go where they want to go and reinvent themselves many times in their life is really quite libertarian. It's wonderful. It's a really incredibly freeing thought. Rather than being afraid of that, I think we should embrace the idea that, wow, I really can go and do different things in my life. I mean, I'm going to give you a quick example. We hired a young man here just recently. And I tell you, Kevin, this kid is just stands out because he works hard, he moves quick, he's focused, and I just think that it's amazing. You look at that and you go, it took us all of 2 days to say we want you permanently, and we're going to give you a raise. I mean, it just why? Because it's just because he's that good and he stands out, and I just don't think it's that hard in this world to stand out. You're a hustler. You work. You came to town. You work 6-7 days a week. And that's why you were able to get this radio program up and going. You worked hard. It's
still
not,
you, like you.
But that's because it's in our blood now.
Right.
You know, it's not a circumstance of having to. But when you're getting started and you just think, well, you know, I'm going to sleep in this morning and I'm going to. No, you study, you crack the books, you work, work, work. You know, what's the key to success? They all say the same thing, right? Work. Hard work. And if you see it in somebody, they stand out. And you can't wait to hire them. So there are plenty of good jobs out there, in my opinion, that are just waiting for that hustler to come in.
All right. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Dave Petzl will be taking your calls. And, Dave, locally, what do we have on the agenda coming up here after the break?
Micron. Different position. They lost money this quarter, but it's different. It's different this time. How's that for a tease?
Fair enough. You're listening to Kevin Miller, Dave Petzl on Idaho's Talk Station 580-KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436, Idaho's Talk Station. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station 580-KIDO.
580-KIDO, Dave Petzo with us as we continue on. Let's go to the phones and go to Terry from State College, Pennsylvania. Good morning, Terry.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good.
Dave, question for you. This can't take a second to get it out. About a year ago, people were starting to call you on your show and claiming the world's going to end, the economy's going to falter and fail, blah, 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 blah. And a year prior to that, in March of 2014, I was with Kevin, gave a report of what people, very smart people, were telling us. Now, these people, they handle $500 billion. They're the keynote speakers all around with the largest groups such as Federal Reserve, World Bank, so we're very intelligent people. They've been right on so far. And just, you know, to keep the record straight, you know, you didn't see that coming. Now they're telling us that by the end of 2016, we're going to see capital controls. We're going to see the implosion of the dollar. But in the relation to the capital controls, J.P. Morgan on their card now has pulled away from the statement, no longer says credit limit. It now says credit access, so they can immediately turn off your credit legally. So there are things happening that these people who are very intelligent, very good at what they do and have been right so far, are predicting. Would you not agree with what they're saying? And if so, why should we hear what's happening here local from you versus what they're saying? Who should we listen to?
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah, long breath.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a question. It sounds like a statement. But
yeah, Terry.
Let's let's go back to, first of all, I'm not sure what why you felt that the world ended the last 2 years. They've been saying that we would head into a
recession.
Terry, let me finish the thought. Let me finish the thought, okay? So if we're saying that the market is flat from where it was 2 years ago, you're right. Catastrophic? I'm confused. I don't know how we're talking about a catastrophic drop. Well, and I'm not sure about what recession you're talking about. We're not in one. We haven't been in one. I just mentioned we could easily go into one, but we haven't been in one. And then finally, I don't know what you're talking about them being right about.
Pay their bills.
I'm sorry, what?
Dave, one-third of America, it's not official. The math is in. They can no longer afford to buy gas, electricity, food, and rent all in the same paycheck. They can't do it anymore. One-third. We're in trouble. And these people were right.
Okay, Terry, I don't even know how to answer that. I really don't. I'm sorry. A third of the people can't pay their bills. That just doesn't actually add up. So, okay.
Yeah, it does add up.
Well, I'll just go ahead and give you that. A third of the people can't pay their bills. I'll try to find that report. I guess it must be out there, but I just haven't seen it.
Okay. Well, and again, you know, we went back to where these global players, they saw this coming, and
you find somebody out there and you say, they say this, this person says that. However, if the Federal Reserve, then they're the enemy, and Yellen must be a moron. She isn't saying that, and anybody that disagrees with that is wrong, and they're not the very smart ones. They're not the ones that manage, what did you say, $500 billion.
No, David, these people, they don't have blogs. They don't sell newsletters. You know, Erdogan, he manages $500 billion for other people, their money. They do that because they trust him, because he's right. That's just one player that I'm talking about. So these people are hitters, and they have to be very responsible with what they're doing.
And the hitters don't agree with that, they're all stupid.
Okay, well, then they're stupid, and
I don't know what opinion you're talking about. Like, it's some universal opinion that all the money managers out there have figured this whole thing out. That's why 600 hedge funds closed their doors last year. 600, a record number of, as you put it, players.
When you look at it, Rogers told us last year that two-thirds of the stock market was below par.
Now, wait a minute. Who's Rogers?
Jim Rogers.
Okay.
Jim. That's right. Jim's been really right on commodities. You're right. He's nailed it. He said we'd be in a super spike.
Well, you know, MSNBC here just a little bit over 2 months ago told us, Peter Schiff, you've been right, but yet you get on the show and you just shred Peter Schiff. And
Peter Schiff hasn't been right in eight. Are you kidding me?
Okay, I'm just telling you. Everybody says he's been right.
Who's everybody?
Say he's wrong.
Sorry, Kevin. That's just not right. It's just not true. Peter Schiff is not.
And
CNBC even interviewed him recently because he's so wrong.
I heard it. They said, you've been right, Peter. Wow.
About what? He hasn't been right at all.
He told us what's coming. He's telling us what's coming.
He told us the dollar would collapse. He told us, and it didn't. In fact, when he said it,
the timing was wrong. Everything was right.
If it collapses right. In the future, he'll be right. So it's okay to be wrong for like 10 years?
Oh, for 10 years. Now, come on. You know, when you called him up personally, you spoke to him personally, and then he came on the show the next day and you shredded the guy. That was really bad form.
Now, Terry,
that to somebody.
Terry, you know what this is perfect for?
What is this perfect for? I'm sure you have the answer.
8 to 10, Saturday mornings with Dave Pezzo.
And I did not call it Peter Schiff. He's never been on the program, by the way.
Peter was doing great. See y'all later.
All right. Thank you, Terry. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We continue on with Dave Pezzo. So what's going on with Micron?
Micron had a $97 million loss. First loss in, 3 or 4 years? But this is why it's different this time, Kevin. This cycle, where obviously chip prices have gone down so much that they can't keep up with it as far as driving down with their technology to keep having a cheaper and cheaper chip. That's really what it's all about, is cost of manufacturing.
Right.
So it's gotten to the point now where they can't be profitable because they can't keep up with the chip price decline. But they have $5 billion in cash. $5 billion. That's what's so totally different this time. They're in a great financial position as we head into, or hopefully, this trough.
Right.
And that's different. And that enables them to continue to invest in the business and also, most importantly, to shareholders, to not go out and have to raise more money at very, very high prices and adding more dilution to the stock. So very good positioning for them. I'm really, you can't help, in a cyclical business, you can't help pricing from time to time is going to be bad. And it is. But you can help by when times are good to not blow it all, and they did not. And they stacked it up. In fact, they've been buying back some of their bonds and reducing their debt. I wish they'd got it a little bit more debt reduced, but with $5 billion in cash, I have to say hats off to them. They're in a good position.
Indeed, though. You go back to, has Micron really ever been the same since the Chinese wanted to buy them?
No. Stock price-wise, no. No. No, we thought the offer was terrible, but it's about to. It is 2X. It's 2X. The offer was now 2 times higher. But, you know, as you and I talked about then, I just don't think it makes any sense to allow the Chinese to have that kind of technology inside of everything. Considering they try to hack into everything, imagine what they're going to build into chips.
Indeed. You know, it was funny. We talked to a local economist here, and I think we talked about this last week, where, you know, the first chip was presented to President Reagan from Micron. And you just talk about the history of this company that continues on. What about anything else in the Treasure Valley going on?
We talk about this all the time, but the vibe here continues to be move to Boise. It's a cool place to be, and it is. And we obviously are winning awards everywhere. There's cranes in the sky all over the place. And now
we're importing our own traffic.
And we are. And even places as remote as Meridian, as you like to point out, is a separate city from Boise, is doing very well also. It's really growing out there in the housing and everything. So
I like how you say that, out there.
Yeah,
in Meridian.
Travel out. You know, if I need a little, drive.
Take your passport with you.
Little road trip, yeah.
Right. Dave Pezzo with us as we focus in on money issues here at 580KIDO. We're getting ready for that dreaded time of year, the tax deadline. Any thoughts on that?
Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, that's as dark and depressing as that is. That is so depressing, and we are getting up on that. And my thought has always been how ridiculous the tax code is, over a million words, way over a million words. And the idea that this is helping us by certain little tax breaks here and there. It takes so much time to get all the data together. It's such a waste of time. I can't wait for something to be more simplistic in our tax system. And it doesn't have to mean that all the rich get away with robbery, as everybody thinks they do, and they don't. But at the same time, that is the thing that drives me nuts. And as an employer, it's 2X, right? You've got all the payroll reports, all those things. You've got to get your business separate from your personal. It is a big, big undertaking every year, and it's an enormous waste of energy.
Indeed, yet we still have to pay for the roads and everything else.
Then just make it simple. Put it on a postcard.
Put it on a postcard. It's Steve Forbes' flat tax, right?
Absolutely. Right. Well, always was a great idea because it also pulls the government away from actually trying to figure out how they can regulate every aspect of your life.
Well, you know, but that's what they do right now.
It is what they do, and it's what bureaucrats do. They figure that they're smarter than you and how you should operate your life. If we want to, you know, go back to Reagan, that was exactly his main thing. The core of giving each individual their own freedom to choose was a way to rebuild America.
Let's go back to the cost of doing business and beyond the headlines here at 580KIDO. Dave Petzl with us. Kevin Miller, let's talk a little bit about energy.
Okay.
Prices creeping up.
They are.
Why?
Oil. Oil creeping up. You know,
what's changed in the world?
Nothing.
Shouldn't it be lessening because Iran is now in the market? So
yeah,
there should be more oil flooding the market.
That's what markets do. They react to what they think is going to happen, and they typically overreact to what they think is going to happen, which is where opportunity is. But you have oil declining, and people are sure with Iran coming on, and then you get the momentum traders, and we saw it go too far to the downside. Now we're seeing it bounce back. Maybe is this the right area? I don't know. It seems to be more stable in the $35 to $40 range. But we'll see what the next news is. But you're right, Kevin. We're still awash in oil. There's plenty of oil out there.
Right.
But what people are buying oil or oil prices are moving on is the future of oil. What does it look like when you have prices this low? I'll tell you what it looks like. Even places like the Soviet Union won't be drilling in the Arctic. It's too expensive. Big companies like Royal Dutch stopped their Arctic exploration. You see the deep sea projects done. They're not going to go online. They're not going to drill any more holes. What we're seeing right now is a slowdown, not just in the shale, but in the big projects globally, the big expensive projects that they can't bring on for less than $40 or $50 a barrel in oil. And that's everybody everywhere. So, yes, the Saudis can keep pumping cheap oil, and Iran can bring some online. But who's going to go and pay Iran or give them all that cash to go in and rebuild all of their fields? It won't happen for a long time, Kevin.
Dave Petzl, we appreciate anything else you want to share with us at 580KIDO?
No, you know, Kevin, it was another great week for the stock market.
I know
you're really
carrying one over that.
Yeah, I know. We're up for the year now, and small cap stocks, in fact, are up 3.5%. So the market has been for 2 months now, it really has been really good. Only 1 week in the past seven has actually been slightly negative. So it looks to me like the market has really stabilized since a really, really rough January and early February.
Dave Petzl, Saturdays 8 to 10.
Kevin Miller.